Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome to The Daily Show. I'm Michael Costa. We are back on the air. Holy shit, it's been 5 months. Man, I love my family, but not for 5 months. This is my first night, and I'm very excited to be here. I've always wanted to host a late night show. I was hoping that it would be on a major network, but I'll take whatever channel this has gone. Now, we have a great show for you tonight, so let's get into the headlines. Obviously, there's one big story in the world right now that we have to cover, the Taylor Swift movie. And we'll get to that later. But first, I want to talk about something that stirs up almost as much passion, the Middle East. That's right. It's my big week as guest host, and I get Israel-Palestine. I don't mean to complain, but as far as scheduling goes, this unspeakably tragic geopolitical crisis is not super convenient time for me right now. Because no matter what I come up with, people are just going to say, this guy doesn't know what the f*** he's talking about. And you're right. That's pretty much the only opinion everyone can agree on. Michael Costa is an idiot. And what do I know about the Middle East? I'm from the Middle West. I'm from Michigan. The best way I would describe my position on the Middle East is poorly educated. And that sounds harsh, but at least I'm aware of it. Because I read a lot of your posts online, and sometimes it's better not to pretend you know what you're talking about. I have friends on Facebook who have the whole Middle East figured out, when I know for a fact they can't even get car insurance. Hey, Joey, interesting points. Don't you have 3 DUIs? Maybe you should focus on you. Thankfully, this is why later tonight I will bring on an actual expert, political scientist Ian Bremmer will be here to help us make sense of all of it. But here's what I'll say for now. There's a cycle of violence here that feels like it's never ending. It's been going on my whole life, and apparently even longer than that. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who wishes that this cycle would end. And everyone has an opinion for who's responsible for it. It's Israel, it's Palestine, it's Netanyahu, it's Hamas. Everyone's taking a side, but everyone is wrong. Because I spent the weekend reading 2 lengthy Wikipedia articles, and I think it's pretty clear who we can blame for all of this mess. The British, okay? You, Britain, and your nursing home king. They're the ones who barged into the Middle East 100 years ago and drew the borders that caused all this mess. And they did it all around the world, by the way. Like, how much of modern civilization is just undoing all of Britain's bad decisions? You want to know how bad they f***ed up maps? They made Ireland 2 Irelands. It's an island. It didn't need borders. But the British were like, hey, you go. So maybe that's the best way we can find peace. Israel and Palestine, it's time to put your grievances aside and join together to invade Britain. Yeah. Let's move on to some business news. Rite Aid, the only pharmacy chain that hasn't refused to print my pictures, announced that it's filing for bankruptcy. Just when I was about to buy that one DVD player that's been sitting behind the register since 2003. Seriously, this news is shocking to me. Are you telling me it's a bad business model to have one employee for every six stores? I mean, maybe they'd have more profit if their deodorant wasn't locked up in a maximum security prison. These guys were going to go out of business. I mean, just look at their logo. They were mashing their medicines the old-fashioned way. That's how I make guacamole. It's tragic, though, because as a part of this move, they sadly had to lay off their entire custodial staff 10 years ago. My point is, Rite Aid sucks, and I'm glad this happened to them. I'm gonna keep going to them, though, because they're the closest to my apartment. Also, in a related story, Spirit Halloween just opened 9,000 new locations. Anyway, let's move on to the biggest cluster f- outside of the Middle East, the U.S. Congress. 2 weeks ago, the House was thrown into chaos by Matt Gaetz, Florida Republican, and what happens when you photocopy Matthew McConaughey too many times. He staged a coup against Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, and what happens when you photocopy John Slattery too many times. And after that, everyone said the Republicans were too divided to elect a new speaker, and it turns out everyone was right.
Breaking news.
Chaos on Capitol Hill. The Republican House dysfunction continues as the fight for a new Speaker of the House continues to sputter.
Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio did not even come close to clinching the speakership.
He failed rather ignominiously to win the gavel on the first ballot.
Jim Jordan has 20 Republicans who decided to vote for someone other than him.
In a few cases, they voted for a guy who isn't even in Congress anymore.
Jordan! That's right. A big loss today for Jim Jordan, Ohio representative, and what you get when you photocopy your grandfather's toe too many times. So, as of now, it's been 2 weeks of Republicans arguing with each other, and they still haven't been able to agree on a new speaker, which is a big deal. The Speaker of the House is the person responsible for speaking in... in the House. So if they don't have one, then nobody is speaking, and it's just so quiet in there. And Congress can't do anything until they figure this out. They can't pass laws, they can't send foreign aid to Ukraine, and they can't impeach Hunter Biden's penis. Right now, Congress is basically Mitch McConnell, totally frozen, and no one knows how to fix it. It's okay to show that because he said he's fine.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about water. It's the thing you hope you just sat in on the subway. According to doctors, we're supposed to drink water basically every day. And in America, most of us do that with the help of these. The number one packaged drink in the United States isn't Coke or Gatorade or even Haterade. It's bottled water. We Americans buy 50 billion disposable water bottles a year. And I know what you're thinking, oh shit, another depressing environment story. So can I not even drink water without ruining my children's future? But that's the thing. This is one environment story that actually has a really easy solution. And I'm gonna tell you what it is. Another installment of Long Story Short. For most of human history, people got by fine without bottled water. People got water from their well or the local stream or by throwing a virgin into a volcano so it would rain. It was a perfect system. But water bottles started to become popular in the 80s, mainly for health reasons. In 1986, the EPA warned Americans that their tap water might be turning them into number two pencils. This might sound familiar to you if you grew up in the 80s or in Jackson, Mississippi last week. And then marketers smelled money. And soon, bottled water wasn't just about health, but a whole healthy sexual lifestyle.
Keep your body at its peak. Drink Evian. Pure Evian spring water from the French Alps.
It's refreshing, it's natural, and it doesn't have one single calorie.
Imported Perrier.
It goes with good food.
It's what I drink instead of a cocktail.
It's what I drink instead of a cocktail. Sure, but you can just say you've got DUIs, all right? We've all got DUIs. Look, props to these water companies. They turned water into something sexy as opposed to something you just need to survive. These ads were basically like... oxygen. It really helps me lay pipe. So, fast forward to today. Thank you. Great performance. So fast forward to today, and the average American drinks upwards to 167 bottles a year, usually right before a long-haul flight when I'm in the aisle seat. Hey, just be an adult and wear a diaper like the rest of us? Now, you might be asking, where does all that water come from? The ocean? No, I tried that once. I got so sick. In reality, in order to get bottled water to the masses, water companies like Nestle often suck up water from public lands for little to no cost. Isn't that awesome, right? We love it when multinational conglomerates find success. The problem is, this creates a massive environmental impact. When these companies are called out for it, they come up with explanations like this.
Nelson Switzer is Nestle Water's chief sustainability officer.
Some people would say, this is the people's water. Is it fair that you guys make so much money off of it?
Nestle has water rights, of course, in this area. From a legal standpoint, of course it's fair. From a perception standpoint, I understand why people are asking that question. But water belongs to no one.
Oh, really? Really, Nestle? Water belongs to no one? That's the dumbest thing anyone has ever said about water. And keep in mind, Gwyneth Paltrow once said that you can hurt water's feelings by yelling at it. If water really belongs to no one, then why can't I go swimming in my neighbor Eric's koi pond? Why did it scare his kids, per the police report? But sucking up all the fresh water is just the beginning of our problems. Making the bottles and shipping them to you uses 17 million barrels of oil a year. That's enough oil to fill 1 million cars for a whole year or grease up Don Jr. for one weekend. Plus, most bottles just get thrown in the trash. Oh, but I recycle it. Okay, thanks for putting it in the green bin before they send it to Malaysia, where they put it in the trash there. And the stupidest part is, it's totally, almost unnecessary. The majority of the country has access to safe, free tap water. We're transporting a product from 3,000 miles away that we can get from our kitchens. In fact, most of the bottled water we drink is literally tap water, including Aquafina and Dasani. That's right. Dasani just takes tap water, adds fart smell to it, and that's how they make Dasani. And maybe you buy natural spring water because it's healthier, but it turns out not always. In fact, a study of Fiji water found that it has more arsenic than tap water from Cleveland. Yeah, you thought bottled water was safer? Turns out it's slowly poisoning you like a wife on Dateline. So considering that tap water is good enough for the vast majority of us, the solution to the huge environmental problems of bottled water is obvious. Boom! Problem solved. Using a refillable water bottle cuts down on fossil fuels, creates less waste, and could even save you $16,000 over its lifetime. That's enough to pay for a luxury vacation or 16 shitty vacations. So long story short, this is like the easiest choice in the history of no-brainers. If everyone in the United States just went with the reusable water bottles, we'd save money, solve an environmental crisis. And the best part of that is then that's one less environmental crisis you'd have to hear people like me bitching about. You probably already have 9 of these. Open a cabinet in your kitchen and one will fall on you. And tomorrow, start using it. That's how you save the planet.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings early and ad-free starting May 1st with a 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.
My guest tonight is a political scientist and author of The Power of Crisis. He helps business leaders, policymakers, and people like me make sense of the world. Please welcome Ian Bremmer. All right. So, thanks for coming.
Happy to be here.
I'm trying to be a global citizen. I can't plead ignorance anymore to this part of the world. It was convenient for me for a while. What can I do? What can anybody do? I mean, what other than just hear these sad stories or like something on Instagram, is there any action? How can I educate myself further?
I would say spend less time on social media.
Okay.
It's dehumanizing. It's disinformation. It's actively destroying our democracy and others around the world. It is making, algorithmically, it's taking people and it's making them angrier and more hateful than anything they would experience in real life.
Right.
So if you want to make a difference, the last place you can make a difference is on social media, where you're only exchanging information with people that are telling you, here's exactly what you need to believe, and those are the people you need to hate. No, it's spending more time with your family, with your community, in your school. It's with people that aren't just like you algorithmically. That's what you need to do.
Really simple question. Not to be insensitive, but for so many Americans that see this as something so far away, why should they care about what's happening?
Because in principle, we, the United States, stand for something beyond just ourselves. I mean, maybe America First doesn't quite say that, but the Statue of Liberty does. Yeah. We all came from somewhere, right? I mean, The Jews and the Palestinians are the same people. They came from the same place. They've grown up in the same home. And we, as Americans, who have historically represented that ethos better than anyone else on the planet, how can we not care when that is falling apart right now in the most tragic possible way in front of our eyes? How can we not care about that?
Yeah.
That's why it matters to us as Americans. Not because oil's going to 150, not because people are losing their jobs. No, it's because we, as Americans, if we stand for anything, we stand for that.
My guest tonight is an economist at Brown University and author of several books on data-driven parenting. Please welcome Emily Oster. Exciting, huh?
I'm excited.
Data.
And parenting.
And parenting.
And babies.
And babies. Data parenting is nice. I like the term. It sounds good. But when my three-year-old is punching me in the face on Father's Day for the three times that day and I'm about to lose it, I'm not thinking about data.
So there are some problems. There are some problems
for
which data isn't necessarily going to fix the problem.
Yeah.
But I think there's another piece of data in parenting, and I think this is really true, that like we can use data to feel less alone. And that's like part of parenting is hard, right? Your kid's hitting you in the face, it's painful.
And it hurts.
Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how old they are.
But what the data will tell you is that 100% of kids hit.
Okay.
And 100% of them hit their dad.
Yeah.
And so you're not alone, because 100% of other people were also hit on Father's Day. And in some sense, like, I think that tells us that we're doing okay.
Yeah.
That there's nothing wrong with your kid. They just hit sometimes.
Where is this data coming from?
survey.
That's like a very, Okay, survey.
So data comes from a lot of places. Actually, when I teach, I'm an economist, I teach at Brown. One of the big things I teach people is like, where does data come from?
Yeah.
And the answer is it comes from surveys. We ask people, and data has its limitations. We don't always ask the most representative set of people, and we don't always analyze it in the ways that get us closest to causality. But the fundamental answer is we get data on people by asking people about their behaviors and what they do, and by collecting information on how their kids do.
I didn't realize how much my parents parenting me was going to turn me, I thought I would parent differently.
Better.
I had great parents, but I thought I would do things differently. Are we just doomed? And is there data on this?
Okay, there is data on some. There are some things you probably do differently.
Okay.
And sometimes because we've advanced our data, you know, you probably put your baby to sleep on their back, and your parents probably put you to sleep on your stomach, because we learn more about data.
Yes.
That we can discuss that later. But I think it is of course true that we're all products of our own parenting, but also that many of the things our parents did are great. And in the end, there's a lot of right ways to do this. And I think we always want to like move away from our parents.
My guest tonight is an award-winning singer, composer, and instrumentalist whose new album is called You're the One. Please welcome Rhiannon Giddens. They're great. They're great. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for chatting with us. You are a MacArthur Genius Award winner, Grammy winner, Pulitzer Prize winner. You studied opera in college, but this is what really got me. You write all your music with the banjo?
I write a lot of my music with the banjo. With banjo and voice and fiddle and whatever instrument I have around. Yeah.
When I think of the banjo, and correct me on this, but when I think of the banjo, I know you will. I picture that scene in Deliverance, and it's down in the South, and it's scary, and it's... Is that an accurate depiction of the banjo?
No, and that's part of the problem, is that media has really warped our idea of how American music came to be. The banjo is an African-derived instrument. It was invented by people of the African diaspora in the Caribbean, and African-American people were co-creators of old time and what became bluegrass music and country music. And it's only in the 19... Yes, thank you. You know, it's really in the early 1900s and 20s when media and how we segregated American music into these different buckets in order to sell it, it just changed our perception, and we've lost a lot of our history. And so that's been a drive of mine for a really long time, is to change that.
Can I be ignorant for a second?
If you like.
A guitar versus a banjo.
Yes.
I mean, I know they look different, but what is the difference?
I mean, how long
do you have?
Well, they come from different. I mean, look, to break it down, the banjo really is descended from a lot of different West African lute instruments, and there's a percussive mode about it. Yep. There's on a lot of banjos, there's five strings, a little short string, which is a drone string, which means it's in one key, and it's very different. And actually, the banjo was more popular than the guitar for a long time in America. The guitar is a relative latecomer, so it's kind of like the banjo is like our indigenous instrument. You know, if you are also, you have to remember all the indigenous instruments with indigenous people who were here, you know, before a lot of people came. But in terms of America as a nation state, yes. I mean,
no, but this is
they're still here, by the way. They're still here. But America as a nation state, a colonial state, whatever. The banjo is this co-creation between different cultures of working class poor people that, you know, made it, and it's unique.
Thank you for answering that question. I know it was, you know, appeasing my question.
That's my job.
good, yeah. So, opera. You're in town to accept the Pulitzer for this opera called Omar, about an enslaved African Muslim that you took the memoirs and converted into an opera. Explain this. I mean, we went from banjo to opera. It's all just...
Yeah, it's been really interesting because it was the opposite. I went to Oberlin, learned opera, and then kind of got burnt out and went down to North Carolina, where I'm from, and learned the banjo. And then full circle, came back, was asked to write this opera about Omar Ibn Said, who was a Senegalese Quranic scholar at 37, sold into slavery. And it's just an incredible story because we're talking about, like, who gets to represent the American story, you know? And it's to complicate that narrative. It's just all these different kinds of people who represent the American story. And he's one, and his autobiography was written in Arabic while he was enslaved, and it's the only document of that kind that we know of in existence. And it's just a really special story. So I just feel amazingly overwhelmed by the fact that I got to make it with Michael Abels, my co-composer, and that for the Spoleto Festival, and that it's been honored with a Pulitzer. It's just like, it's a dream come true.
That's crazy. That's awesome. My guest tonight is a wilderness guide and self-reliance expert who won season 6 of the History Channel show Alone. Please welcome Jordan Jonas.
All right. Man, all right. What do we have here?
So, thanks for coming to New York City.
Yeah, what an honor. Thanks for the invite. Now I'm in your world.
Yeah, you're in my world now. Yeah. People can have a reaction to hunting, mm-hmm. big game hunting. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to see pictures online and see this and go, I don't like this, you're killing an animal.
Right.
I also feel like you care a lot about nature and conservation.
Yeah.
How can those two be connected?
Actually a really fascinating question. I think we are, no matter what we think, we're a part of nature.
Yeah.
And in my experience, people who hunt, who rely on nature to, you know, feed themselves or families, there's few people that are more in tune with the health of a particular ecosystem because you rely on it. So though you do take individual animals at times, you know, according to all the laws and all that, you're also really, you know, wishing the best for the species and working to, you know, provide that via conservation, which is, you know, as when you're hunting, you're paying money into the system. They put that money back into the science and the habitat protection that protects animals. So, interestingly enough, the good news is we've done a great job of conservation and have brought, you know, whitetail and elk and all these animals that from the brink of extinction to, you know, thriving numbers through ethical hunting, you know?
Yeah.
I can understand the knee jerk. Yeah.
You see and, these pictures and it, you know, mm-hmm. but I think one thing that really was beneficial for me, I'm not a hunter, mm-hmm. but I definitely fished and killed a grouse mm-hmm. that week because I was starving.
Right.
And you said, we're only going to eat what we can procure for the next 36 hours. Well, guess what? Costa doesn't really procure much. But man, and this is silly. It's going to be silly to you.
No.
And maybe silly to everybody else. But when I took this little grouse's life, mm-hmm. it really meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sad to me.
Yeah.
But we then cleaned it. We cooked it that night. It was my dinner. And I just thought on the flight home, I made a lot of notes. I had so much I had to be thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'd never been that close to my food before.
You appreciate it so
much. I go
much,
to the grocery store. I buy mm-hmm. 4 pounds of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
3 of it goes in the trash. I mean, it's like, man, that was like such a different connection. And that's gone for
I
the most part from
valuable.
Us.
Valuable. Yeah, I know. I think we've all been disconnected. You were talking about packaging earlier.
Right.
You know, everything just comes
in a package.
That was
Ron. He's the other guy. But yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's important to have that connection with our food. Otherwise, it just all happens on a farm or in a field somewhere, you can act like you're not a part of the system, but we are. So we should do our job well.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.